When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Deep, melancholic tones fill the mind as oscillating, warped voices swirl through the air. This space has the uncanny feeling of a descent into an uncertain and ever-shifting hell. This scene, Losing Sanity, is brought to you by Describe. Describe, ready roleplay. Visit describe.com/RPGBot and use code RPGBot at checkout for 5% off your first subscription payment. Welcome to this special RPGBot.quickstart, Quick Start, How to Play Call of Cthulhu Part 4. In this episode, Tyler and I will tell Ash about what stood out to us in our Call of Cthulhu session, and ask a couple questions about the system that we didn't demonstrate in the session that we played. With me to do this is Tyler Kamstra.
Hi, everybody.
And Ash Eli.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the main adventure.
And as usual, I'm Randall James.
So, thoughts on Call of Cthulhu so far?
I had a ton of fun.
Okay.
like, that was really cool. Like, it felt very like mundane investigation getting going. Like we had a chance, we got to know the characters a little bit. We got to wander around and talk to people. And then like we found the first clue. It's like, oh, there's a mystery here. And it's not just Scooby-Doo villains. It's like there's some stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty typical for Call of Cthulhu. Pretty much every Call of Cthulhu game is kind of a mystery of something that you have to figure out. That's why the player characters are called investigators.
That makes a lot of sense now that you explain it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that was new for me. So I've played a lot of 5e at this point. I've played a reasonable amount of PF2. So a lot of like dungeon, fantasy tabletop, playing something that felt more modern, more like I'm walking down the street in my own neighborhood. It felt different and it was actually really nice to do. The other thing I took away from it is if I wanted to bring new folks into tabletop gaming and they weren't so sure about the dungeon fantasy, this would feel really natural because, you know, almost everybody who consumes media understands like pulp, if you want to get into that. They certainly understand kind of a 1920s setting, you know, the kinds of conversations, how you expect people to behave and act, how you expect people to engage with you. They're also, everybody's familiar with the horror genre, the mystery genre, and kind of that uncertainty of stepping foot into an investigation. So I feel like the transition from, I know this genre, and therefore I feel comfortable role-playing in it, feels a lot smoother than bringing the average person into dungeon fantasy.
Yeah, I think it is definitely more accessible because not everybody likes fantasy, but everybody loves those old-timey noir movies like Casablanca and stuff like that, or even just a good horror. And, you know, you don't have to play horror if that's not what you want to do. There's Pulp Cthulhu. You can play sort of a swashbuckling adventure like the Indiana Jones or, you know, Journey to the Center of the Earth or stuff like that. It really harkens back to those pulpy, like, sci-fi adventure stuff. And that's kind of what I like about it, is it's pretty accessible to people who, because not everybody likes fantasy.
Yeah, so I feel like the entire session went really smoothly. You know, character creation was super easy in part two. Actually playing the session was easy. You know, we talked a little bit about the mechanics of like, no kidding, what does it mean to roll? But I think once we got through it, that was very straightforward. Even the leveling mechanic that we went through at the back end was very straightforward. I guess I say all that to say, like, was there any complexity that we hid away? Is there anything about the system that's a little bit harder when you get into those details?
I think that the complexity really comes from just sort of figuring out which skills are going to be more useful in a situation than others. And some of the complexity really comes from skill contests and stuff like that, which we didn't get to touch on too much. For the most part, Cthulhu, it can seem on the surface like a really complicated and hard system, but it actually is pretty straightforward and simple, especially if you're coming from something like 5th edition D&D or especially Pathfinder. Call of Cthulhu is going to seem really simple because you're only good at a few set number of things, and the stuff that you're doing isn't necessarily constant, and it's stuff that you can more easily wrap your mind around, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. You bring up the idea of, contest or contested skill checks. I guess that leads into, we didn't have combat. We made the decision not to fight the ghoul. Honestly, from the roleplay perspective, it's certainly how I would have handled it. Of, you know what? I get to peace out. I'm just, I'm out of here.
Yeah, and combat can get a little dicey really quickly, like really fast. And I think that's going to be the biggest shock to someone who's coming from classic dungeon fantasy is that, it's the first round and I'm already almost dead. So that can be kind of a shock. Oh, you mean I'm not invulnerable? Because it is shocking how quickly a situation can spiral just from the minute go. But again, I think that if that's a big turnoff for you, if that's something that is like, that doesn't sound like a fun time to me, that's really what Pulp Cthulhu is for. Is Pulp Cthulhu, your characters are definitely able to take a hit more and they feel more like dungeon, like D&D characters. So the thing that I recommend people is like, yeah, if you want to do classic Cthulhu, that's great. Just know what you're getting into. But if you're trying to transition to a new system and you think that a modern system is like a cool idea from D&D, like especially if you're coming from D&D, maybe try Pulp Cthulhu first.
Yeah, that was actually one of my big takeaways from the Concepts and Themes episode we did as part one. When you called out that like, yeah, if you're fighting anything other than a person, you're probably going to die. Like that has to be the expectation.
I may have over-exaggerated a little bit, but yes.
I don't know. I saw my character stats. I don't know if I could have survived a fight with a person.
You definitely would not have, but yeah.
I had like 70 stats. In dodge.
I don't know. 70 in dodge is really good, actually.
Yeah, that I tried to compensate.
But your health was garbage. It was real bad.
I have more fingers on one hand than I had hit points.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's not a mutant, so...
So since characters are so frail in Cthulhu, like bog standard Cthulhu, not pulp, and we did the advancement phase towards the end of the episode 3, and I rolled terribly and didn't advance at all. So what does a character feel like in long-term play? Like, since you're so frail, an advancement can be inconsistent, unreliable, and even when it does happen, it's fairly slow. Like, what does it feel like to play the same character long-term?
So this is something that I don't have as much experience on. So people who have played Cthulhu longer than I have can feel free to correct me. But the thing that is different about Call of Cthulhu is you advance rather slowly, like you said, as opposed to in D&D where you're getting something new every level or whatever. The difference that you are improving every session, unlike D&D where you'll go sessions without gaining a level or whatever. So there is a marked improvement in your character. But I think the appeal of how the character works is you get less invested in the mechanics of the character and it's more focused on the role play aspect of the character, like the character's like personal stake in the story as well as the story itself. So that's why like Call of Cthulhu is definitely more of like a story based game rather than like a combat focused or action based game. You'll go around the world maybe in the pages of Nyarlathotep, which is one of their most famous globe-trotting adventure campaigns. You're going all over the world, and it can be very fun. And yeah, you just have to accept in the back of your mind that the threat to your character dying is always there, but that makes the stakes feel a lot more real. And every time you survive to another session, it feels like an accomplishment. And so while it can be frustrating for someone who's used to gaining power a lot really quickly, I know a few of my friends who would absolutely hate this game because they don't like slow character progression. But that's not the point of the game. The point of the game is not a power fantasy. It's a storytelling fantasy about, you know, horror and surviving in a world dealing with forces that are beyond your understanding.
Yeah, because one of my big takeaways too from the concepts and themes is on the topic of sanity, that yeah, my character might be getting better and better every session, but if I'm not careful with the resource of my own sanity, I might still burn the character hot and out, and then wind up having to roll a new character in order to continue in the campaign.
That is true, but there are ways to get sanity back. We didn't really touch on those at the end of the session. So sometimes keepers can reward sanity for good role play. Like if you make a specific step in your character arc, the keeper can do that. The classic way to regain insanity, there's three ways. Well, four, I would say. So when you improve a skill to 90%, you gain back some sanity.
No.
In between sessions, the time between sessions, it varies based on the chronicle that you're running. But sometimes months or even years can go by between sessions in game. Obviously, not in the real world. That can happen, but, you know, that's a different issue. But in game time. So a character regains a set amount of sanity every 1 or 2 months. And that can improve based on if you go to therapy, if you do self-care, which is like getting in touch with your key backstory component, or checking yourself into a sanitarium. So those are the three major ways you can do that. The fourth being the skill improvement, and then the keeper being nice to you. it's not like it can feel like, oh no, I just lost sanity, I'm never going to see those points again. That's not true. There are ways to get it back. It's difficult. It is easy to lose sanity and it is hard to get it back, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. So just, you know, don't be reckless.
That's key to this game.
Now, we talked a bit about the magic system in the previous episodes. If I remember right, you told us that magic points are like, you spend them and they never come back.
If that's what I said, then I was wrong. Magic points do come back. They actually recover. Okay. They recover pretty quickly. Unlike your health, which recovers at a rate of about like one per day, like 1 point per day, magic points go back to full within a 24-hour period. So you get an amount of magic points back per hour based on dividing what your magic power total is by 24, essentially. So that's essentially how magic power works. Like you can get that back pretty quickly. The stuff you can't get back are we did talk about this, and this is probably what you're thinking of, is that some spells will require you to spend your power. Like there's magic power, there's magic points, and then there's power. Power determines your magic points. And so some very powerful spells require you to spend power, and that is next to impossible to get back. So while you can probably sling like, you know, base level spells and be like pretty successful if your sanity can keep up with it, being like a god level magic user who casts really powerful magics all the time, that's going to be a pretty short lived character.
Got it. So what are those low level spells that I could, you know,
so there's like stuff like wither limb, like something that you can make someone's limb wither, or,
and that's low level.
Yeah, that's low level. There's some others, I'd have to look it up, but you know, basic damage sort of spells. But again, even just a basic damage spell is going to cost you some sanity. So they're not exactly something you want to be slinging all the time. The more powerful spells are like, let's see if we can contact Cthulhu, because that seems like a good idea. Oh.
Speed run insane characters.
Yeah. The ones that tend to eat your, like, an actual characteristic, it doesn't necessarily have to be power. I think some actually take different characteristics from you, are the ritual spells, like stuff meant to banish things or bind a creature or summon Cthulhu.
Let's say, can I find like an innocent teenager and put them at the center of the circle and then drain their characteristics, but still benefit from the ritual?
There are actually some spells that require you to sacrifice a person, but you still have to sacrifice some stuff from yourself too. So yeah,
okay. I know. Done for a free lunch.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm hoping there's some folks at home who have listened to these episodes we've recorded, said Call of Cthulhu is for me and I want to get involved. How should they get started?
So there's lots of ways. There are games running on startplaying.com all the time, or you can find stuff, I'm sure, public listings on Roll20. You can also, if you want to run it yourself, the starter set is really, really good. It's probably, I reviewed it. It is one of the better starter sets I've ever seen for a role-playing game. It's really good. It has a booklet that teaches you, it's a solo adventure for just one person, for you as a keeper to learn how to be a keeper and how the game works. It's the best way to learn how to do the game, which is great. I want every game to do this.
And bonus points there, isn't it structured like a Goosebumps style choose your own adventure book?
It is, yeah. It is structured like a choose your own adventure book. It's really good, and I recommend playing through it multiple times. Don't just play through it once, because again, depending on your choices, you're gonna interact with part of the system but not all of it. I encourage you to keep playing it and see if you can get all the endings to it, because there are a lot of endings to that game, and it's a good story. Like, I think it's really well done. Yeah, and so after that, like, it slowly introduces you to more and more stuff. Like, it has three adventures. The one I ran for these two was actually from that starter set. It's called Paper Chase, and it's meant to be played after you play the keeper introduction scenario. You're supposed to do it with one other player, but as you saw, you can do it with two. And then the next one after that ups the ante to a full party of about 3 to 4 people. And then the last one is like about 5 to 6, or you can stick with that 4 people. And what's great about it is that it doesn't throw a bunch of stuff at you. Like, you can read the manual if you want to, but you could also just learn how to run the game by just following that set that I just told you about, because it slowly introduces you to new mechanics in every adventure and has little asides that tells you, hey, this is how this works. If you want more information, you can find it on this page. It's very helpful. Really helped me running this game for these two guys, because that way I didn't have to like flip through this huge tome that is the keeper's handbook. That feels it's not as big, I don't think, as the Dungeon Master's Guide, but it is big. But yeah, and it can be kind of a slog to get through. So I think this is a better way to go about it. And then after you've done all of that, if you still have questions, that's what the Keeper's Handbook is there for. And that's a better way to go about it than just throwing a bunch of it. Just say, read the Keeper's Handbook. Good luck.
You'll figure it out. So yeah. You mentioned the Keeper's Handbook. What are the other books that comprise the core rule books?
So there's the Investigator's Handbook. That one is substantially shorter than the Keeper's Handbook. It's about half the length. And that's just something that you can hand to your players. And it presents stuff pretty well. The Starter Kit, I believe, also provides a quick start rules, which is just the basic rules you need to run all of the adventures that they give you in the starter set. If you want to suggestions on good campaigns that you could probably run if you just want to get into it.
Yes, please.
That would be A Time to Harvest is really good. If you like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, that's kind of the vibe. The other one that I mentioned before, I got the name wrong, Masks of Nyarlathotep, is considered one of the classic Call of Cthulhu campaigns. It's really old. They've been doing it for a while. They have it out for the 7th edition, which is the current one, and you can do it for both Classic or Pulp Cthulhu. A good starter one for Pulp Cthulhu is the Twin-Headed Serpent, I think it's called. That one is really fun, Classic Pulp-style adventure. There's a lot of really good ones. like, you can't really go wrong. Chaosium really does put a lot of work into their adventures, and they all, especially the newer ones, are all really structured very well. And they have a lot of contingency plans and stuff. So, like, you know, if the players do this, that's weird. Shouldn't have happened, but here's how here's how we fix it, essentially, which I appreciate, especially coming from D&D, where they don't do that as much. So yeah, like, just any of those are good starting points and will be a lot of fun for your players.
Awesome. And if you want to support this podcast, we will have affiliate links linked in the show notes. Feel free to go click through, buy, and yeah, start playing Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, and you can also read my review on our site about the starter set if you want more information about that.
That's, I just checked, that's also in the show notes, so go read that too.
Perfect.
All hail the Leisure Illuminati.
Hail!
Hail!
I feel like this one's especially a special hail, because the Leisure Illuminati really feels like it fits in Call of Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's gonna be a thing that I add in my next Call of Cthulhu game.
It's like, those men over there plotting sure look relaxed.
Mm-hmm. Dan secretly runs a cabal dedicated to Dagon.
Yeah, it's like the Leisure Illuminati. It's all golf and bocce ball and Mai Tais.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
It's my kind of cult.
I would go on that vacation. I need that vacation right now. Dan, how do I join? I'm Randall James. You'll find me at amateurjack.com and on Twitter and Instagram at jackamateur.
I'm Tyler Campstra. You'll find me at rpgbot.net, Facebook and Twitter, rpgbot.net.
I'm Ash Eli. You can follow me on Twitter at Graven Ashes, or at my YouTube channel, Ash Raven Media, also at Graven Ashes, where I'm soon going to be releasing, probably looks like a 4-hour video at this point, so that'll be fun for me.
If you've enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcast and rate us on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. It's a quick, free way to support the podcast and helps us to reach new listeners. You'll find links in the show notes. You'll find affiliate links for source books and other materials linked in the show notes, as well as on rpgbot.net. Following these links helps us to make this show happen every week. Please also consider supporting us on Patreon, where you'll find ad-free podcast episodes, early access to rpgbot.net content, polls for future content, and access to the rpgbot.net Discord. You'll find us at patreon.com/rpgbot.
Oh, man.
That was fun.